This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 37, and I'm delighted to be joined on the show today by John Regan, alternative finance and fintech angel investor, who was one of two seed funders of Platform Black, and who has now become an active director of the business. In a world where most everyone seems to portray themselves as an entrepreneur, John is the real deal. He has a track record of building three businesses from startup to trade sale. How many folks have done that once, let alone three times? This deep experience will come in very handy when we get on to our topic of the day of coping with crises. But first, a little excursion. For the 50% of listeners overseas, you may not be familiar with the Panglossian nature of much of the fluffy bunny vibe about fintech in London. You know that it's all this kind of all sugar and spice and all things nice. It's less than it was, but still overly present. Dr. Pangloss was the principal focus of Voltaire's 18th century novel Candide. He believed that this is the best of all possible worlds. No wonder the book was a satire, and this is why I feel that Pangloss would have felt quite at home in the London fintech scene. As I suggested in my New Year's forecast episode, this fintech word is becoming more abstract and less relevant, as all the real business is being done in verticals, which have relatively little overlap. And this business word is key. Fluffy bunnies rarely seem to have any real experience in business. Business is a subset of life, and you don't need to have too many decades in either to realise that things go wrong, in small ways, but also in oh shit ways. In the bars and bazaars, the whispers slash gossip goes around about this company or that. As I've indicated before, in terms of verticals in fintech, the equity crowdfunding scene seems to produce the most. And if you want some gossip, check out a very unfluffy bunny blog on deals and companies in that sector. Just Google the truth about equity crowdfunding. In P2P, by far the most rumoured, gossiped about company has been Platform Black, the number two player in the fintech invoice discounting market. They have traded over 2,000 invoices with a total value of over £100 million. I've heard countless stories from countless sources. Plenty of smoke, but differing accounts of the fire and how much damage it did. John has kindly agreed to come on the show today to dispel some of the smoke and talk about the fire. If this was just about Platform Black, then it would be an interesting story. But of course it's not. It could be about your life or your business. If not today, then tomorrow. To think otherwise is hubris. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi John, thanks for joining me today.
Morning Mike, it's great to be here and have the chance to talk about the reality between some of the rumours that you've been hearing in those bars and bazaars.
I'm sure the rumours are more fun, but let's get on to the reality.
I think the bars are probably more fun.
Exactly, yes, yes. And as for the bazaars, that's another story. So coping with crises, I mean, we're going to be talking about financial services, of course, and financial services companies and business, but actually there are more risks in life as a whole. And in terms of doing risky things, there's more risky things than being an angel investor. And I noticed that last year you were busy sailing the oceans from Africa to South America on the round the world race or whatever it is, a race in which this year somebody died.
Yes, that's right. I actually sailed from St. Catherine's Dock in London all the way to Rio, which took us 40 days in total, with a stopover in the middle, but 30 days at sea in one go, crossing the Atlantic, crossing the doldrums.
And you went down the coast of Africa and across?
That's right, down the coast of Africa and then across to Rio.
Where are the doldrums as such?
Across the equator. It's a weather system where, I'm not technical, but due to the rotation of the Earth, two weather systems meet and it creates some very strange situations where you have very little wind and then all of a sudden squalls which build up and can, you know, appear from nowhere in literally 30 seconds.
Sounds like my life actually, as well as the fintech story we'll get on to. And you were telling me before that one of the fascinating things that I'd never thought about, not having sailed the oceans from one continent to another, is distances from land become very significant.
Yes, they do. In fact, quite often they become the only significant thing because we work on a watch system, so the time of day means nothing. The two things that anyone on the boat knew were when the next meal was coming, when the next cup of tea was coming, but also how far we had to go, how far we'd been. I remember at one point realising that I was 2,000 miles from the nearest land, and I knew very clearly in my head that if you're lucky, you can get a helicopter 200 miles out. After that, you might be able to get some medical supplies dropped from a plane if you're in trouble, or you're reliant on the nearest passing oil tanker. So, yeah, quite a grounding experience realising that.
Yes, I mean, that is a situation, I mean, a bit like what it is above 8,000 metres of the Himalayas, where if something goes wrong, you're pretty much screwed, really.
Yeah.
There is no coping with crisis. There's only the shotgun.
Well, yeah, there's no EU health and safety regulations at that point, I don't think.
Yes, so that must make life feel sort of very real, but very scary at times, I imagine, in the middle of the night when it's all looking like it's about to go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is, actually, at the time, you don't really think about it. It's when you have a moment where you're a bit bored and there's not much happening that you sit and wonder what on earth you're doing there.
And do you think the experience of that very real, very visceral kind of risk, what does that mean for the rest of your life and business? Does it make you more blasé or more scared?
A bit of both. I mean, certainly, you know, we live in a privileged part of the world, and I'd never been in a situation before where I'd had a serious conversation about the possibility of running out of water, for example. And that was quite a shock to actually really experience that. One of the other things I realised, actually, is that there are some real common learnings. You can go to a very odd world in the middle of the ocean on a boat and actually see that there are some real common factors with real life back at home in a rich country. And the fundamental thing, actually, that I learned was it's all about people and all about stopping and taking a breath and looking around at the people around you and what's going on in their minds, as well as what's going on in yours, and then working out how the hell you're going to get through this next problem.
Yes, I mean, it's an interesting thing that I think the sort of frontal cortex of the human being is possibly being too overdeveloped, certainly in our culture, because we tend to live in a world of abstraction, you know, emails and texts and all these things which aren't really real, as opposed to a spinnaker lashing around, or as you say, running out of water, which is very real. So how close did you come to running out of water?
Well, on those boats, you can't carry enough water for 30 days. You can carry enough water for about a day, so you have a water maker, which basically filters the salt out of the sea. And our water meter was leaking, and we had a decision to make, actually. We believed 5 days from the nearest port at the time we made this decision. And the decision was, do we ration ourselves now? We were in 40 degrees of heat in the doldrum and drinking 8 litres of water a day each, and not going to the toilet very often. Really was sweating out. And the decision was, do we ration ourselves now, knowing therefore that we would have water all the way into port should something completely go wrong with the water maker? Or do we carry on as normal, hope it doesn't break? The impact of that would have been that had it broken at that point, we would have gone for 2 or 3 days without water. You know that a human body can last about 6 days before things start going really wrong, but you feel the impact a lot more quickly than that, particularly in that heat. So that was a tough decision that the crew took between us.
Gosh, I just realised I probably ruined the whole episode, because that's probably the most scary story of the lot before we come back onto the business. So apart from sort of being the seed founder, one of the seed founders of Platform Black and sailing the oceans, you've done, I say, one or two sort of more entrepreneurially things in the past as well. So very briefly, how have you got from there to here?
So yeah, in my career, I've set up three marketing services businesses, and scaled those very effectively just by looking at the way things were and thinking that there was a way of doing things better, which I think everyone does. I think the difference between the people who set up businesses and the ones that don't are they're prepared to do something about it, which is a very frightening experience, because the first thing you face is you might be wrong. Very easy to say it in the pub, how daft your boss is, but then to actually implement your own decision is a tricky one. How did I get here as a result of that? Well, actually, the last business that I set up from scratch was up for sale in 2008, just before the big crisis. Our biggest client was RBS, and we sold the business in December 2008. And to put that in context, by January 2009, RBS had been nationalised. So it was a very stressful sale, and we were very, very aware of the impact of the banking crisis. And I stayed with the business, and we continued to have RBS as a client, so we were very aware again of the inside story of what was going on there, and it felt very much like there was a decision being made at a very senior level in the country, including the banks, about whether or not it was viable to have a system based on the movement of money. Which, when you're sitting on a pile of cash that you've just generated, having worked very hard to build a business and then sell it, is quite a salutary thought.
Yes, going back to abstraction, money isn't real in the slightest sense at all. All money is these days is bits in bank computers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just numbers.
And you say, having worked incredibly hard and 9 days a week and 27 hours a day for a long time, you suddenly realise, oh, all I've done is bits in a bank computer. And if someone says that doesn't matter, it's a bit disappointing.
It was a bit worrying. And that started conversations, oddly enough, around, well, what do we do? How could this cash be sent to be deployed? And it was with a partner in that business that we started talking about the fact that there seemed to be two clear problems emerging in that crisis. And one problem was that there must be other people like us on a larger or smaller scale who had cash that they felt that they could perhaps deploy more safely than the banks even, but certainly where they felt the banks weren't doing a very good job. And at the same time, there were individuals and businesses that couldn't get their hands on that cash. And we started talking about what mechanisms might be able to be put in place to allow that to happen in a more direct way, rather than using banks as intermediaries. that, I think, was the genesis of businesses like Platform Black.
Why was it Platform Black? And if you called it Platform White, would it have been better feng shui or something?
Well, I have to say, I didn't found the business and I wasn't in those initial discussions, but my understanding is it's Platform Black as in the black, as opposed to in the red.
Oh, I see.
And Platform as in financial platform.
I thought it was a fashion choice or something, like black is the new black or something.
Well, it could well have been, but certainly the founders justified it that way.
So in terms of your business background, as we were discussing before, things go wrong in life in a small way or a greater way. And of course, in all your various businesses, you must have experienced plenty of times where you're sitting in a room and you get news that you really didn't want to hear and your life would have been much better without hearing it.
Yes, that's true. I think one of the other learnings from running your own business actually is that you never feel secure in a job again, because you know that every business must be going through a huge crisis, and if you don't know about it, it means you're not on the inside.
Yes.
But the reality is, yes, I've seen a number of crises, and the beginning of the solution is always the same, and it's to step back and take a breath. You have people who are concerned that they're going to get blamed for the problem. You have people who are concerned that the business is going to go under and they're going to lose their livelihood. And the important thing is to step back from all of that and say, let's not focus on things that are going to continue to go wrong. Let's focus on using our intellect to work out what we can do about it.
Yeah, so I think just thinking along similar lines in terms of things that I've seen, some of which have been quite significant in my merchant banking career, I think the biggest challenge that I've noticed is what you might want to call the politics of the situation. So once you get to this taking a deep breath and honesty, okay, what exactly has happened? You know, what are the potential avenues forward? Once you get to that stage, then actually it's relatively easy to do. But before that stage, the natural tendency, particularly in large organisations which can be sort of fiefdoms, is that people near where the problem has originated tend to feel, to be politest, pride of ownership in sorting it out themselves somehow. To be less polite, they tend to want to kind of, you know, minimise the betrayal.
Or you get that rogue trader danger, yep, where people try and trade their way out of it to cover up the earlier mistakes.
Absolutely, so, yes.
Yes, and I think it, you know, it's absolutely key to give people the confidence to step back from that position as well. Confidence that if they solve the problem, they will be recognised. Confidence that if they expose a problem, which potentially is because of something they've done, they won't be overly criticised for that mistake.
Yes, I mean, also came back to crisis. Crisis to me requires two things. It requires something to kind of be wrong and out of alignment and risky or dodgy, and then an event to happen which precipitates that. So as I mentioned before on the show, I'm a big fan of air crash investigates as being the only thing of any interest in terms of financial services risk at the moment, because ticking a million regulatory boxes isn't. And it's always the case that when a plane has crashed, there has been some weakness in the system as a whole, and then one day somebody's tripped over it and maybe not done the right response. So in a way, a crisis can be, at best, a time when a business model weakness or something gets resolved, even if it's just not correct oversight of rogue traders, because somebody should be spotting their P&L in position every day.
I mean, they do say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, lots of things haven't killed me and made me weaker, actually.
Yeah, it's not always true. And as you were saying that, it did cross my mind to make the glib comment is probably better to steer around the iceberg rather than hit it. The iceberg still exists, if you can see it and preempt it, and then that's probably a better solution. Although I think, you know, you're right, in the real world, 90% of the time, people will deny that there's a possibility of a crisis until they've got no choice.
Yes, and this is what really pisses me off about the whole of the fintech scene, is not that the fact that some people love PR and spin and hype and all that kind of thing. That's fine, and you know, it's a bit of icing on the cake and a bit of jolliness. But the trouble is, when that kind of spin, very similar to sort of the progress of New Labour and spin from Thatcher onwards in the 80s, when that kind of stuff just turns into denial, outright lying, and an unbalanced view of the world, then I think that's really dangerous for the industry as a whole, because investors then get lulled into thinking, oh, this is utterly risk-free. We're getting 5, 10, maybe even 15% risk-free. The wrong kind of people get sucked in. They lose money, which screws up their lives. And then the whole industry is set back, and say it's a problem I see much more in crowdfunding. So I think we're all agreed in terms of the honesty. So moving on to this specific thing about Platform Black, as I say, I've had interesting times the last, probably about 12 months late in the evening in bars, and people say, oh yeah, and have you heard about Platform Black? And, you know, I've got lots of different stories and different versions of what did happen and what didn't happen. So maybe you can just take us through the Platform Black story roughly from the beginning and, you know, the period of crisis. and then post-crisis?
Well, at the risk of sounding like Spin, Platform Black is actually...
No Spin is, of course, Spin itself.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't spin anything at all, no.
No, I just give positive messages.
Exactly, yes.
But actually, the crisis you were talking about was as a result of the success of Platform Black. And interestingly enough, you know, rumours of our death are greatly exaggerated. Another glib comment, I know. Platform Black, in its genesis, was presented very much as the concept of eBay for invoices. And the logic behind that was that you may have a tradesman who was working perhaps with a much larger organisation, so for example a plasterer working for a large home builder who was used to being paid and wanted to be paid on a weekly basis, but actually was in an environment where he was going to get paid on 30 days. And for whatever reason, whether that was to buy more plaster or whatever, to go down the pub, whatever that might be, it may be beneficial for him to have his £500 invoice paid a lot more quickly. And Platform Black was designed to present the opportunity for a person with £500 to talk to the plasterer with an invoice for £500 and say, I'll tell you what, I'll give you £490 for that invoice. You can spend that money how you would like right now. And when the invoice gets paid, I will have made £10 and my money back. And if you're happy with that transaction, off we go. The fundamental point about that is that this was very hands-off. All Platform Black was doing, in the same way as eBay introduces people with the opportunity to enter an auction to buy secondhand goods, was making an introduction, and this was a hands-off situation.
So it's just a marketplace.
Just a marketplace. And what that means is, of course, is where anything to go wrong, the position is, well, you were the person lending the £500 to the plasterer, and maybe you should have looked him in the eye and made sure that you were comfortable he was going to pay you back, because all we were doing is saying, this guy needs the money and you have the money, perhaps you could do a deal.
Yes, and that's kind of what's happening in equity crowdfunding on the more sort of Parlem High, sell them cheap things. It's kind of, well, it's up to you investors to decide. The fact is, actually, in that particular case, because that hasn't turned into a big crisis yet, in that particular case, when the platform itself knows that almost every thing that comes onto its platform misses all of its financial targets, you think actually it might, as a platform, be quite nice to tell the investors. But that's a different story. But anyway, the dynamics are the same.
Yes, that's certainly true.
The arm's length idea.
The arm's length idea cannot continue to work. I mean, one of the challenges with the internet and businesses which work with technology is the speed with which they scale. In the old days, when you scaled up from being a bespoke furniture manufacturer to running a furniture factory, there were stages in between, including building the factory, etc., 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 which meant you had to pay attention and you had to recognise that the business and the skills required to run the business were changing significantly. With anything electronic, all you do is buy another virtual server from Amazon or wherever you're providing it from, and all of a sudden you're twice as big. And if you don't then take a step back and say, well, we're twice as big, what are we going to do about that? Are there new implications as a result of that scale we need to take account of? Then you can run into problems.
Absolutely, I entirely agree. And you know, one of the excitements about tech as a whole is that you can create some new app, which is exciting for some reason. You can sell one, and then you can sell 10 and 100 and 1,000, and before you know it, you're selling a million. And that's not particular problem, you just need to get a few more servers. The problem arises is when tech meets FS, because every example I can think of in the past where a business has scaled exponentially has of course run into problems.
The problem arises where, you're absolutely right, where FS meets normal people, in quotes, people who aren't perhaps savvy with money and the way money works. And what I'm talking about here is the absolute reality, which is that if you are lending people money or funding invoices as we do, you are going to experience a situation where you aren't paid back. That's just a reality, no matter how careful you are or not.
Absolutely.
And so there is significant substance behind what might appear to be bland questions, which, you know, Platform Black and all of the other platforms ask as well, which is, do you understand what you're doing? Are you a sophisticated investor? Do you understand the market that you're in? And actually what lies behind those questions is, do you understand that you might not get your money back? And I think that the situation that Platform Black was in, where the business was built around this concept of, you know, a one-on-one handshake, one person talking to another guy and saying, I trust you, and risking a relatively small amount of money, clearly it's significant to the individual, but a relatively small amount of money is quite different to where the industry has very quickly evolved to. And for Platform Black, to give you an example of that, very quickly, within 2 or 3 months of setting up, in the first month, the business traded, I think, £16,000 worth of receivables, of invoices. We've just gone through the 100 million mark now, that significant scale. But within 2 or 3 months of the business up and running, our average invoice size was £40,000 being lent out for 60 days. And that was very different, much more successful than the business itself has envisaged at a concept. We thought it would be a much slower growth and that we would look like eBay with lots and lots of small transactions going on a small margin. But that volume of transactions was what the business model was built around. So that change was something that the business was pleasantly, in the short term, pleasantly surprised by.
Yes, so your experience as a seed investor is you put your money in there and it all sounds quite good and oh, it's starting okay, and oh, wow, this is going really well. It's presumably the emotional journey.
It was the emotional journey, but also becoming aware that actually the business model needed to shift. And this is often a challenge. I think I've seen this with a number of businesses, some of which I've been running myself and other businesses which I've watched and been mentoring. It comes back to that ability to step back, which I can't over-exaggerate the importance that that has been in my personal career and on a sailing boat as well, actually. That ability to step back and move back from the idea which is your baby often, which you're very proud of and defensive of, and say, actually, the baby has changed and grown up into a teenager or whatever, you want, however you want to phrase that. And by that, what I mean is you have to look at it and say, actually, this model needs tweaking. This model was wrong and needs to be changed. And that was where, as an investor, I became more interested in Platform Black and more involved, where we were beginning to have discussions with the people who'd done a fantastic job of setting up this fantastically successful business, saying, you've done a fantastic job, but now you need to change what you've done. And that was where we started looking at the way in which the business, the expertise of the people within the business, and we realized that, yeah, we had some great entrepreneurs there with some great innovative thoughts and fantastic ability to implement those thoughts. But what we didn't have was financial risk experience.
Yes, that's really interesting because you probably don't know, but I mean, I must have written about a dozen articles for Altfi News this year on risk and on the necessity to learn the lessons of the last 30 years in financial services risk. And we'll come on to Uncle Jeff, CEO of GLI Finance, a bit later and maybe get him on the show someday. But I know that one of the things that he sees a lot of and is very concerned about is corporate governance. Now, corporate governance sounds like some boring PC phrase invented to keep sort of consultants happy and to make sure that FTSE boards have about 12 inches of paper to get through at every board meeting. But in old money terms, what it really means is that on your board, you've got some non-execs who are good chaps or good chapesses, and they'll just ask questions that you guys hadn't thought about. And they have taken a step back because they're not in the office every day. And of course, it's the same with an angel investor. And in terms of the average board in fintech, certainly you do see some people who have been in financial services or something like that. But for my money, you just don't see at all what you do see in insurance companies, in banks, fund managers, or anything like that, which is, for example, building societies has probably come the nearest to being a P2B, where you've got a risk committee of the board chaired by a non-executive director, a grey-haired person such as yourself or a no-haired person like me who's been around for a while and so on. That's really interesting. You're doing a great job of running risk, but have you thought of X? I think that's how it sort of tallies the whole governance thing around. And so in the meantime, you're, as an angel investor, to a certain degree, taking a step back from it. You're putting these kind of points over about the necessity for a phase change. So what happened next then? Was this a sort of something that was hard to push to people? Like, it's a wonderful baby. It's growing really well. It's now 7 years old. But you know what? We're going to genetically engineer it or turn it into a girl or whatever that sort of awful thing was on the BBC recently. That part of the world where girls spontaneously start growing penises at the age of 11 and turning into boys.
I don't think I've watched the same things as you.
Obviously, you read different newspapers from me. Actually, it was on the BBC, I think.
So 7 years. 7 years in financial services years is probably 2 days. But I mean, where the business was examining this hands-off model and saying, well, okay, fine, we've got people who are sophisticated investors, they've said that they are, and we are giving them the information to make assessment as well. So we were risk scoring from Experian and presenting that to people as well. But actually, we were beginning to ask the question to say, look, perhaps we should be applying more diligence to this and feeding more information back. And we weren't in a position to advise, but we were in a position to provide facts. And that's what we started to do, and that's what we were pushing the founders to do, was to provide more factual information.
Which year is this roughly now then we're talking about?
Which year?
Yes. When was Platform Black set up? 2011?
2012.
2012, okay. Which is only 3 years ago, funnily enough, going back to dog years and financial services years.
Which year? Actually, no, I don't think of it in time. I mean, this conversation really was beginning to happen in January 2013 was the genesis of this. And what we started to do then actually was to start to look at, okay, can we bring some risk people into this business? We had as our non-executive chair, David Robertson, who was chief executive of Bibby. So we had that grey-haired experience there.
And for people who don't know, Bibby is very well known in a very narrow vertical of the world, and they're very big, and they are.
Well, Bibby is originally a shipping business, I believe, but they are also the largest privately owned invoice factoring business.
In the world.
In the world, is it? I'm not sure about that. Their former chief exec had very kindly agreed to be chairman and mentor for the business, and he was beginning to make noises as well and say, look, we need to now look at this business not as someone where a business which is making handshakes between two individuals, but this is beginning to look increasingly familiar and increasingly like a financial service business. And the challenge there is, how do you run a fast scaling tech business in the same way as a bureaucratic bank. And there are compromises to be made both ways. Now, at that time, we had started to look for risk people to bring in on contract to look at the way in which our processes work and to suggest some changes. It was an unfortunate set of circumstances in that before we had really got anywhere with that, the event happened which sparked all the rumours about Platform Black, which was we had a construction business and we had a large exposure to that business, and they came to us and said that they couldn't pay back.
Which spoilt your day.
Which spoilt my
day. And half the next day as well.
And the circumstance there is that we, again, took that step back and said, well, what do we do? What do we have in place? And what we knew that we had in place was a sensible legal infrastructure, which had been written by PDT, again, for people who don't know, a well-established solicitor in the financial services and receivables trading arena. So we had a good legal agreement in place with both sides of the equation, with the people whose invoices were being funded and the people providing the funding for the invoice. And we sat there and looked at what we were able to do and started to work our way through this. And I think this is where, you know, my experience of scaling businesses and the experience of certain other people on the board came to the fore, because, you know, what we concluded very, very quickly was this is the point where we need to bring in some absolute expertise and experience from the traditional industry, because we have to accept that we may be innovative and disruptive, but what we now have is a very old-fashioned problem, which is a large debtor who doesn't want to pay us back. And the processes for dealing with that will be the processes that have been in place for a very long time.
Exactly. And the skill set required for that is not the skill set to take something from 0 to 1 to 10 to 20 people.
Absolutely. Every business needs some expertise. The expertise in actually doing what the business does is different from the expertise required to start the business and to scale it. And every business needs to recognise that very quickly and deploy those experts at the right time.
Yes, and I think that's an important point to underline, because, as I say, you're very openly talking about your challenges with this in the past as a business. But there are plenty out there in alternative finance who still have this challenge today, including some who haven't really recognised it. And sadly, because of this new compliance wave and regulation, there are a number who actually think that ticking regulatory boxes will sort this stuff out. It won't. Regulators will never enable you to win a Formula One race or a MotoGP on a motorbike race.
No, that's absolutely right. It's people on the ground with experience and gut feel and knowledge who can sit down and address these problems in a way which only humans can at the moment. Perhaps in years to time there'll be machines that do it, but right now it's still very much a human intuition based process.
Exactly, and to a large extent the rule book goes out the window. You have to have a certain degree of wisdom and just do the right thing. There isn't a dot to dot, although, as you say, in situations like the recovery there's a precedent. Just focusing in on this one, because I've heard plenty of stories, and the stories all really revolve around the business almost burning to the ground, and the stories differ in how much it almost burned to the ground or went over the edge, and whether it was just fraud, incompetence, weak underwriting standards or whatever. You know, what was the sort of context of this? And also, I believe it was quite a chunky one, so concentration risk comes into this, where again, there are plenty of new P2Ps out there at the moment that are really very concentrated. You know, maybe if your funding circle's open or rate said, you've got thousands of loans and you can, investors can spread their money over them. But actually, by definition, when you're small, it is quite chunky.
Yes, that's right. And there is a challenge there for any business in this arena, which is that people coming in and funding invoices need to understand that actually it's a long-term game. Returns on this type of investment, although they appear to be short-term, although you're trading 30, 60 or 90-day invoices, actually you need to look at your return over a longer period, because some of those, not very many, our current default figure is 0.4%, but so not very many will go wrong, but they do go wrong. And when they go wrong, it's binary. It's not like share prices dropping.
Yeah.
It doesn't get paid back and you have nothing. So you need to make sure you're very, very spread out, lots of small investments in lots of different invoices, which is challenging when there are a few big invoices coming across a platform because it's new. We had at that point actually shifted the model to the extent where we were allowing 5% chunks of an invoice to be traded, which meant that there were 20 people involved potentially, or where there was more than one invoice, even more than 20 people. And actually, so people talk about, well, did we nearly go bust, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the reality is we were a market maker. And so the relationship was not between Platform Black and anyone else. We were responsible for introducing some sets of people, but the sets of people actually had a relationship between the two of them and not with Platform Black. What we felt we had a duty to do was to help those people, to use our expertise and resource to help those people get their money back. But actually, that was a tricky situation, because the very fact that we weren't involved in the relationship was a hindrance to that.
Oh, that's very interesting, actually. I've never heard that angle before. Just taking a small step back before we get on to that one. As you say, so Platform Black isn't sort of financially involved in the transaction, but of course it is reputationally involved. There are plenty of marketplaces out there. And if I go shopping at Sainsbury's and I, you know, half my family die because the chicken in their marketplace was off, I'm unlikely to go to Sainsbury's and I might go to Waitrose next week. So I take your clarification about there wasn't a direct financial risk to Platform Black, but in terms of gossip after plenty of beers in the evening, it's sort of roughly along similar lines, which is actually there was a significant reputational issue, which if it hadn't been dealt with well, would have hindered people from going to the business.
But there were two intakes of breath, actually. The first intake of breath was, okay, so now we're going to find out if this legal infrastructure really works and whether it will allow us to chase the debt. And you're right, the second intake of breath is, and is anyone ever going to trust us with their money again? So dealing with the first one, well, the answer is we're still here. And yes, the founders have done a really good job. And we did tweak it. You learn by your experiences. And we've changed the structure. And I won't go into the technical details of that. But we've changed the structure in a way which actually now makes it much easier to recover debt.
So just for clarity, it wasn't a fraud. You might not want to use the word underwriting if you're focusing on the platform. But in a way, am I putting words into your mouth to say that the main response was to tighten up the criteria of what is able to list in the first place?
There were a number of responses. So first of all, deal with the initial problem, which is to sit down with that business and say, okay, fine, what is the way through this? And the way through that was actually we agreed to novate what was a short-term loan agreement, which was due for repayment immediately, into a longer-term agreement.
And for those people who aren't FS savvy, novate means?
Novate means change. We transformed. We had one contractual relationship with the business which said that based on an invoice which they had sold, they needed to pay us back. And we changed that to say, okay, fine, we're going to make this more like a loan now, and we will accept regular payments on a monthly basis until the total amount has been repaid. So that meant that actually they had breathing space. They had another 12 months in order to raise the cash rather than pay it right now. And so, you know, what that did was gave the people who are providing the funding a much greater chance of recovering the money which they had invested. And that's what's happened over a period of time. That business has slowly paid back. Now, in the interest of transparency, I should say that in the end, that business did go into administration. And that process is now working through now. So we don't know how much more the investors are going to receive back from the money which was outstanding. They've received over half back to date.
Right, so there's more than 50 cents on the dollar. I had got 50 in my mind for some reason.
Yes, it's just over half. So they've received over half back, and it's very difficult to say whether there is any more in the pot to be divided up, because we're now in a situation, of course, where you've got the banks and everyone else coming in and claiming their share of what's left.
Absolutely, and thank you for saying that, John, because as I say, that plenty of P2Ps have got problems, maybe not such a large chunk of importance to the business at the right time, but I don't think there'll be a P2P at all in a few years' time that won't have had to deal with recoveries one way or another, and that won't be worrying about whether you're getting 0 cents on the dollar, 10 cents on the dollar, 50 cents or 99 cents on the dollar. So sadly, it's something the industry needs to go through. And I think one of the things they can learn from you kindly sharing your story is that, and I've seen this myself wearing a risk hat, of course, which is that quite often people can do the right thing and going in the right direction, but actually going in that direction very quickly is actually quite a good idea. If you think your aeroplane, if you think your jumbo jet has got a weakness, you're really better off sorting out the left wing now rather than slowly over time. And coming back to National Geographic Air Crash Investigates, there have been a number of occasions where, you know, the regulator of aircraft in the States, whose name currently escapes me, has told airlines to do something, given them 12 months to do it, and 6 months later an airplane's fallen out of the sky because he gave them 12 months rather than 12 weeks.
Yeah, the challenge for any alt-5 is, I mean, I think the learnings from this is the things that we got right. We communicated very clearly and very honestly at the point where we knew there was a problem. We did not just close the doors. We sat down with the business that had a problem and said, look, let's try and find a way out of this rather than let's just blindly apply the contractual terms that we've got with you. And that would have been, you know, working on behalf of our funders. And we had a sensible discussion that way and got to the best conclusion that we could as a result of that. And I think that, you know, people can take reassurance from the fact that, first of all, the legal infrastructure works and we were able to recover money. And you're absolutely right. As a result of that learning, what we then did was have a good look at the risk criteria that the business was applying, which at the time, as I said, we were a market maker, so it was relatively hands-off. And we weren't the only one in the market, and I believe there are still businesses in the market applying that approach. We actually did apply risk criteria in a much more traditional fashion. And so as a result, when you look at the published default rates, which we now publish on our website, what you will see is that the default rate for last year is significantly worse than this year.
Because you're a sailor and you just think in terms of cups of tea rather than the calendar. When you say this year, as I recall, the 2015 numbers aren't published. The 2014 numbers are very good. Yes. The second half of 2013 isn't so good.
That's right.
So you're this year and that year is different for the rest of the world.
That's a fair point. So you will see reflected in our figures. And again, part of the decision that we made at the time, actually, about transparency. At that time, we weren't publishing our default figures, but as a result of that, we decided to publish them.
When I heard all these rumours, I did look it up, and there weren't any performance numbers there, which seemed to indicate to me that actually it wasn't something to be boasted about at the time.
Well, we didn't want to boast about it, but also hiding something is worse than revealing it. You know, you hide something when you've got no choice. And we did look at this and say, no, this is still a functional business, and we're dealing with an issue, and we're quite happy to describe what that issue is.
And in terms of clarity, as I recall from seeing the performance numbers, which are available on the website, there's a footnote which says something was novated into a loan or something like that. So the numbers are excluding.
That's correct. This is a caveat for anyone looking at performance rates in this industry. It's very, very hard to compare like with like, because we have 30, 60 and 90 day loans and that's it. So we know within 90 days if something's gone wrong. Yeah. There are other businesses out there who are providing loans for 5 years and they haven't been trading for 5 years yet. So they're within their rights to report a zero default rate because the loan hasn't come to the point at which it needs to be repaid.
Absolutely. And it's even worse than that. I mean, one of my annoyances about regulation in general is that I wouldn't mind if regulation did things well and efficiently, but I don't personally believe it has very well over the last 30 years and certainly not at the moment. And so you talk about default rate. But that isn't defined across the industry. People have got different definitions of default, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months. So it's all a little bit of a pickle. So you describe where you've been in the past, John. You've shared your challenge, and there, but for the grace of God, have gone many others. And no doubt there will be others going in the same direction going forwards. You were talking about the phase change in the kind of management as you go from a startup through to a scale-up to a more mature company. And again, this is a journey that I see many firms on. And informally, I can speak to chief executives of some of these businesses, and some of them do really love the 1 to 10 people stage of the journey. Some of them the 10 to the 100, and you know, no doubt there are people who enjoy the sort of 50,000 to 250,000 stage of the journey, which certainly isn't me. The management had significant changes. A platform lack, as far as I've seen from the outside. The shareholder register keeps changing quite a lot. On the top of my head, GLI Finance own 48%, and you and the other angel about sort of 24% each. So it's a very sort of simple share register now. So where is Platform Black going from now going forwards? And as you say, more recently in the 2014 numbers, you're showing very conservative underwriting standards.
Platform Black is consolidating, really. We have understood the way in which the business works, and we've understood and put the business in a position where it's scaling quite comfortably now. We've got rigor within the business, and the challenge for the business now is to make sure that we strike the balance between being innovative and fast and delivering a really good, fast, flexible service to the people that really need it, which are the SMEs who haven't got time to worry about how to raise their funding, spending lots of time dealing with bank bureaucracy. So they don't have time to do that, and we need to be able to be innovative enough to deliver to them what they need, which is, you know, where they're able to pay it back, we need to fund them quickly and effectively and cheaply as well. At the same time as that, we need to provide the rigour to keep the people providing the funding comfortable that we are actually able to recover that money that we're giving to the SMEs. And that's a tricky balance because risk people, by their very nature, are risk averse. And innovators, by their very nature, are the opposite of that, whatever the opposite of that is. And so, yes, we do have some very interesting boardroom discussions now. But that's the point. People have an equal voice, whereas before it's been weighted too far in the opposite direction. And there is a danger for any business, and you know, Platform Black is very aware of this because of our history, of going too far the other way and becoming too conservative and becoming just like another Bibby or an offline, less disruptive business. And actually, that's not the market that we're in. So that's where we're trying to evolve to. We've gone through the 100 million mark now in funding, and that is a significant growth for a business which is only 3 years old. And that business has the infrastructure to deal with that and scale from there. And as you can see, we've got default rates which are dropping significantly, so we're able to process that. The other challenge that we've got is to educate the people or SMEs within the marketplace. Historically, factoring was seen as the finance of last resort. I believe accountants are still taught that this is something that you do if you've got no other alternative.
Someone was telling me about some country in Europe where it's sort of, if you're going for that kind of stuff, it's seen as the kiss of death. It shows that your business is screwed.
But what businesses need to learn is that in the post-2008 economy, this is a way forward. And with technology, this isn't about tying yourself into a very sticky, expensive arrangement with the business, which is going to take your whole sales ledger and pick and choose which invoice they fancy financing and charge you all sorts of fees in order to do that. Technology now has enabled us to be in a position where you can just, with no fees associated at all, other than the cost of the money that you're going to borrow, just simply put a single invoice up. And what that means is if you win a big client and you need to recruit two or three people to deliver to that client or buy materials or goods and services, whereas in the past, you either had to get that client to pay you up front, or go to your bank cap in hand and possibly be told no. Now you've got a very simple solution, which is you take the invoice that you issue to that client, you know that that's payable in 90 days, and you can fund it immediately.
Which is the model that Market Invoice are following, and I was on the show a few weeks ago, and they've now passed 500 million, so between the two of you, you're doing 600 million. Just to pick you up on one small thing, going back to my background in risk, is that I recognise what you say about the risk people being the people who try and stop you do things, and the innovators being the people who are actually trying to make things happen, and there's a tension, you can get that balance wrong. I think it's not completely true, although I end up speaking to myself these days because there aren't many people still around who remember the old days. But the origin of that is that generally in banks, the bankers wanted to do business because, you know, you go out there, you're trying to do deals and that kind of stuff. That's what they like doing. And sometimes even they've had bonuses for doing business. So within an organization, they were the ones trying to do business. And by and large, the credit department in organizations was the one trying to stop the bankers doing business. So this is the origin of that tension. Credit functions generally saw themselves as trying to stop the bank doing business. Interestingly, though, going back to the culture of risk, people from more of a market risk background have got a very different approach. People in market risk know that you need to take risk in order to make some money. So I think the market risk people, he says, waving a flag for his own original tribe, the market risk people are those who are much more balanced in terms of, we're trying to win this race, how do we go fast enough to have a chance of winning, but not so slow that we don't crash. So that's a small correction.
I think, you know, based on your correction is absolutely right, that the tension has to exist. The point I was making is there's a third component to that, which is technology. And the challenge there is you'll have an innovative technological person saying, I can deliver you technology, which will say yes or no. The computer says yes or computer says no. And it's making sure that if you're going to deploy that technology, it only gets deployed in a situation where it really is dealing with something which is so clearly a yes or so clearly a no, it's not making a mistake. And it's making sure that actually the technology picks up the grey areas, which is where the people really make the difference. And it's setting those boundaries, which I think is the fundamental thing, which is going to be about success or failure for any business now in this marketplace.
Excellent. Well, that's been a really interesting and very rich show, John. I've enjoyed talking to you. Time's gone by fast. And I think that, for me, what's come out of this, and it very much shows your experience in business as a whole, is not just, as I said at the beginning, that here is an alternative finance business that had a big problem, didn't want to have that big problem, it's sort of recovered from the big problem and it's moved on, but much more philosophical questions about the nature of a marketplace, the nature of due diligence that's being done, how you deal with difficulties, and how you deal with management transitions. I think there's a lot of material in here which every alternative finance and most fintechs could really think about quite a lot themselves. You know, some of these things that you're talking about are almost things that boards could do on their away a day every 6 months and say, oh, these questions that John was raising, and, you know, what can we learn from this? And I think, again, one of the things that's a very easy win is to try and learn from other people's mistakes as well as your own, because there's lots more people than just yourself. And as I mentioned at the beginning about hubris, if you think you're not going to make their mistakes, good luck, because we all make mistakes and things all go wrong. So thank you very much for sharing those lessons for the industry, John. And also, I hope that clarifying the situation around what did happen at Platform Black means that you're now at the sort of final phase in which it's all out there, it's all accounted for, and you can move on. And I know that there are plenty of cynics in the world, and sometimes I play that game myself, and they will say, well, you are a chunky investor in Platform Black. You would say that, wouldn't you? But my feeling is, both in terms of our conversation now and before, that you've given a very clear explanation which doesn't conflict with any of the rumours I've heard whatsoever. And more to the point, it's now on the performance data about this particular challenge. And bringing you back to a very personal thing, we started off talking about risk at sea, and I'm off to Bangkok very shortly, so with the benefit of technology, hopefully this podcast will release itself when I'm on holiday in Chiang Mai. And 2 weeks after I booked our holiday, the biggest bomb in Bangkok went off and killed dozens of people, which was a bit disappointing and a bit concerning. And I was talking to somebody, actually my window cleaner, who goes quarter of the year or something, and he was saying the thought that had gone through my mind, which actually, oh, especially as the kind of, it's a military dictatorship right now, it's much safer after the explosion than it was before, because now they're going to really crack down on security, whereas before there was a certain degree of relaxation about it. So it's one for investors to consider themselves, but there is this perversity about risk, which is that organisations who have tripped up and almost landed flat on their face may well be more balanced, as you say, between the innovators and the kind of credit risk people trying to stop it, and those people who haven't had significant problems yet, who are skating on the thin ice, but don't actually realise that the ice is thin below. So thanks for that, John. It's been most interesting.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think you're absolutely right. I think the balance is there within Platform Black, and it's growing and scaling significantly. The cost of finance across the platform is dropping significantly, which is great news for the SMEs who are raising funding on the platform. But also, we're generating a very good return for our investors in an environment where we're talking about interest rates possibly falling again. People are making, you know, 9, 10, 11% reliably across the platform now. And you can see from the default rates that actually that kind of return is a very good return based on what appears to be a very low risk that they're now taking.
Absolutely. And from an investor perspective, which we haven't spoken about as much as the platform, it's really, really simple. It's what mummy probably told you when you were little. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. If you take your £1,000 and you stick sort of, a, you know, 100 lots of 10 quid all over the place, then it doesn't really matter if one's a problem. It's only if you stick it all on number 42 and number 42 happens to go wrong when the roulette wheel spins that you've got problems. So to an extent, it requires two to tango in terms of a particular crisis like that affecting people's bottom line.
That's absolutely true. And I would say very strongly, people come into this with their eyes open. They are funding invoices and sometimes invoices don't get paid. But what we have is processes in place to make sure that most of the time they do get paid and that as a result people can generate a good return on the money that they invest across the platform.
And the opposite of my analogy occurs to me. So if you're going to a casino and you spread your money over all the numbers, you will go out guaranteeing to lose because the casino is taking the money out. However, given the dynamics at the moment, if you spread your bets widely in peer-to-peer as a whole, certainly in the high-quality platforms, and you're obviously one of the high-quality platforms, you're almost guaranteed to win because the rates of return, as you say, are 5 to 10%. You know, that absorbs quite a few losses if you're putting it in the conservative platforms. Good. So time's flown by, John. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app. Or sign up at londonfintechpodcast.com for email alerts and new episodes. Live long and prosper.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. Come away from the city, with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, with the faces so grey, with the pain of the the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. City goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight.